Morning, Bob, Zamis.
Honorable Hip, how are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I am much, much better, Honorable Hip. Been a long time.
Yeah, after a long time, I've not been seeing you, but we know what happened in the family. Hopefully, you're coming well with your family.
Yes, Honorable Hip. I think things are much better now, and I'm trying to be strong for them, but personally, now I'm much, much stronger. Much stronger.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
All
We
right.
welcome you back, man. There's been a tough time for you, we understand, yeah.
Yes, thank you so much, Honorable Whip. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Honorable Oscar. Good morning.
Morning, Honorable Whip.
Hey, how are you? Correct.
I'm with Okay Leadership. How are you?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
You're looking fresh for the moment. I
Oh.
can see that you are ready.
It's better if one looks fresh.
Yes, no, I agree.
Yeah, because
Yeah.
nowadays we work under tremendous stress.
Yes, no, that is true.
If one
Yeah.
body is not well,
Yes.
also reflects bad when it comes to work.
It's true. Now today I'm going to ask you to pardon me. My connection is not stable. So I'm going to request to keep my video muted throughout the
No,
meeting.
fine, no problem, no
Okay,
problem.
thank you very much, leadership.
Darren? Darren?
Hi, Mr. Kaiso.
Okay, who's the leader of the delegation?
Chair.
Yes.
Yes.
It's the delegation from the CSIR chair, I would assume.
Yes.
Oh yeah, this is Professor Majo, the chair from the CSIR. I'm the chairperson of the board, and we are here with the team chair. We will get going once you give us the green light.
Okay, now welcome. Now speaking to Policile Kaiso.
The whip, okay. Thanks, whip.
So, Whip, you are whipping us two line today,
the
ne? I can see you are ready. I'm good. I'm good.
Hey, you're very super yesterday, man.
Is it? Thanks so
Yeah,
much.
very
No,
super.
thank you, thank you.
And
Thank you so much. Thank
what
you
an
so much.
excellent work that you are presenting there with a high talent,
Is
Yeah.
it?
You revived me to go back.
Okay.
It was very beautiful work that you were doing there during the memorial lecture. I mean, the memorial service. Those comments.
Yeah, in fact, I received a call from the family members. They were so happy,
Okay.
and yeah, they were very happy. They were very happy about the man I meet,
in which the memorial service was run. And at least it shows that now the whole thing is now at the level of closure. Darren, how are you?
Good morning, Mr. Mlenzana. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I can see that you are good.
All right. Thanks. Hello, honorable members. I just wanted to announce that I received a message from the chairperson. He's currently still engaged in another very important meeting, and he has asked that the WOP please open the meeting for us. I hope that that will be in order. Thank you.
No, it's fine. Thanks, Darren. He can continue. The only glitch with me would be almost the same with Honorable Matava. You know, I'm at Laboria Park, and the network here is not that perfect. So my video will be more off. But I will be with the meeting throughout.
Okay,
so thanks.
Me too, Chairperson.
Okay.
From Acacia.
Yes, comrade.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. I think we should start with our meeting. We have taken note of your concern just before we start that there will be those glitches that we have talked about frequently as they come. But let us start opening the meeting and welcome everyone who's in this meeting today. As you know, that we are going to be having our guests who have I've seen already they are in the meeting. The delegation head has just spoken to me earlier from the Council for Science and Industrial Research. So to make a presentation before this committee, thereafter we'll engage that input on presentation. We'll allocate some time for them to can be able to make presentation to before this committee as a council to tell us now what is their experience in terms of, you know, approaching their work in terms of since the development of or the impact of COVID-19 in the country and the declaration of the state of disaster, that impact which might have affected them to what an extent and et cetera, et cetera. So we'll get that presentation from them. Perhaps let me indicate that already the secretary of the committee has indicated that the chairperson has made an apology. Hopefully, if things goes well, might join the meeting at a later stage. If not, then we'll proceed as we are proceeding with the meeting. And can I take, are there any apologies, Darren, before we start? You are mute.
Sorry, I received an apology from Mr. Sheikh Imam. He is attending another portfolio committee meeting. That's it, sir.
Are there any further apologies, honorable members? So apologies have been accepted. We're now going to go to item number 3. That will be the presentation by the CSIR. And I would like to ask the Professor Thokozani Majozi to introduce his team and then proceed for about 15 minutes. We will see if whether the time is still short of, we can adjust time. And also remind us about also the mandate of the CSI star so that we remain on track actually on the mandate of the council. Professor Majosi.
Thanks, Mr. Whip, again for the opportunity to present on our work
as the I'd like to also invite the rest of the executive team and the CSIR communications and parliamentary team that's present to introduce themselves. Thank you. Maybe let's start with Esme.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Esme Kennedy. I'm the Group Executive for Legal Compliance and Business Enablement at the CSIR. Thank you.
And then we go to Kongera.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Kongera Njobe. I'm the Group Executive responsible for Business Excellence and integration, and one of the areas I look after is our office in Parliament. Thank you.
Okay, then we go to Rachel.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Rachel Chikwamba. I'm the Group Executive that is responsible for Chemicals, Agriculture, Food and Health at the CSIR. Thank you.
And Dodi.
Yeah, good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Motori Masromule. I'm the Divisional Group Executive in charge of Mining, Manufacturing, Defence and Security.
Ashraf.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Ashraf Dinda. I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Ndile.
Morning, Honourable Members and Chair. My name is Andile Mabindisa. I'm the Group Executive responsible for Human Capital and Strategic Communication. Thank you.
Elia.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Elia Matigane, Manager for the CSIR Parliamentary Liaison. Thank you.
Aziza.
Good morning, Honourable Members and everybody in the committee meeting this morning. I'm Aziza Fredericks. I'm also in the Parliamentary Office of the CSIR.
Julia.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Julian and I'm the Administrator for the Parliamentary Office in Cape Town.
Well, thank you very much, colleagues. I think that covers everyone that is present from the CSIR. I don't know if I've left out anyone. If I have, please just introduce yourself. Thank you. I'll hand back to you, Chairperson.
Well, you may proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let us proceed then. The presentation has been uploaded. I would assume that all of us can see the presentation. I'll just give the preamble to the details that will be given by the CEO and the executive on the interventions that the organization has made, particularly around this time, and also just the constraints that we are facing. There will be the details in that, to that effect by the CEO. I'll just give the preamble on just the overriding view on the challenges that we have, where they stem from, and perhaps the way forward. So let's go to the first slide.
Just before you move further, maybe it's important for you to explain that this is a revised presentation to the committee members, so that they shouldn't get lost as to what previous presentation was sent to us.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll allow the CEO to come in there in terms of the revisions from the last presentation. And I'm sure that the last one would have been pre-COVID, I would assume. So there could be revisions there. Maybe the CEO, what could be the new revisions on this presentation?
No, thank you, Chair. And we apologize for that. There were last minute changes that we made to the presentation. It's 4 slides that we've added. When we come to those slides, I'll mention them specifically that they are additional slides that were not part of the presentation that we shared with the committee on Friday last week.
Okay.
Okay, you may proceed.
Right. So thank you very much, CEO, for that. So on the first slide, that we start off with the chairperson did indicate that perhaps we should just talk about the mandate of the organization. It becomes very difficult in the chair and committee members to talk at length about an organization like ours without revisiting the mandate. We are tasked with conducting directed multidisciplinary research and technological innovation. And the idea behind that is to foster scientific and industrial research. The ultimate goal is to improve the lives of ordinary South Africans. That is the mandate in its crystalline form. So it is clear then that in all our endeavors, we have to be mindful of the fact that there is a strong industrial development component. And of course, there is a strong research and scientific component at any given point in time. And that is what informed our recently adopted strategy, which was really adopted about 2 years ago. The idea behind the strategy was to accentuate the I in our CSIR, because there was a call, if not the clamor from our industrial partners, that CSIR, at least in the recent past, had ignored the industrial component of its mandate. So that is what informed the new strategy. And we do that without, of course, losing our foothold on science. The science is still there, but it must underpin industrial development. So that is the essence of the new strategy. Now, we are of the view that this strategy will need a lot of resources for it to succeed. In a resource-constrained ecosystem of innovation that we find ourselves in, we have to rethink our approach to this so that we give meaning or life to this strategy. And perhaps this is the essence of my message today and the colleagues that are accompanying me to this morning from the CSIR. Now, the parliamentary grant, if you look at our revenue as an organization, and for a long while now, we had 30% of our revenue coming from the parliamentary grant, and then 70% of this revenue came from what we call contract research. This has been the steady profile or ratio between the parliamentary grant and the contract research. So contract research is what we derive inside by doing work on our own with the partners, and the parliamentary grant comes from our fiscals. But we know that that will be decreasing, and we've gotten some notifications to that effect, but it might come below the 30%, which might put a lot of constraint on our intended objectives, particularly deriving from this strategy that we've recently adopted. I must say, Honorable Chair, that even though we say it's a 30-70% split, 70% being what we call contract research, we know that also within that 70%, the bulk of it, almost 80% of that, still comes from the public sector, still government-related financial support. So we needed to deviate from that grid by making sure that we invite more industrial partners into this, and also where possible, form new industries. So this might be a problem for us. If this ratio changes, it will be a problem for us going forward as a way of realizing our strategy. As a risk, the fact that we rely on the public sector, it is a big risk. We've always seen that it's going to be even worse now, given the constraints on our national fiscals. So if we go to the second slide, As an organization, we have proven our relevance in our national system of innovation, particularly now around the time of COVID. You would recall, honorable members, that right from the outset, we were one of the organizations which were approached first by the government in terms of assisting with mitigating the scourge of this virus. And one of the things we did right from the outset was to set up what we call the National COVID Information Center, which was supposed to assist government in optimal allocation of resources and also giving an idea of where the intensity of the spread could be. So that center is still there. And recently you would have heard in the media about the ventilator project, which was in collaboration with some of our industrial partners. CSR played a very, very key role in coming up with those ventilators. They are in production as we speak, so we are continuing to make an impact. These are just some of the very few interventions. There are many other interventions, and I think the CEO is going to talk and the team will talk more into that. So we have been really active around this time as an organization. And I think if there is a time that has proven how relevant an organization like the CSIR is, it is this time that we are going through. This challenge has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that we are an organization that needs to be protected and supported at all costs. That's perhaps the silver lining in all this. And this would not have been possible, honorable members, we would not have been able to step up to the plate within a very short space of time. We did all this within a very short space of time. We wouldn't have been able to do that if we're not ready. And we're ready because of prior investments that have been put into this organization to give it sufficient latitude in terms of infrastructure, in terms of its capabilities, emanating, of course, from also the human capital development, because we've been very fortunate in attracting some of the best talent in the country. So there has been prior investments to this organization, and that came in handy when this COVID-19 descended. We have to continue with that capability. We know that we cannot continue with that capability if there isn't enough investment. So we need to be supported financially going forward. Meantime, we will need a lot of support from government as we find our way in with this new strategy and ultimately be in a position to be almost self-sustainable. So we need more government investment to implement the strategy. And I think it should have been highlighted in that sentence, the very last bullet there. The investment that we are asking for is to implement our strategy, because we view it as not a very long-term investment. It should be an investment that allows us to be on our feet and then find our way within our strategy, with our strategy, within our ecosystem of innovation and beyond. And then we believe that if we properly apply our strategy as it stands, if it does find its way as it stands, we will be in a position to be a self-sustained organization in future. That's the message from my side at this point. Allow the CEO then to dwell on the minutiae for this presentation with his team, of course, and then at the end we can take the questions. I must declare at this point, Honorable Chair, that I have another engagement at 11 o'clock. If it so happens that we are not done by 11, I will have to be excused so that I attend to that engagement. But if we are done before then, I'll be here throughout. Thank you very much, Chair. And I'll hand over at this point to the CEO.
Thank you very much, Professor Machozi. Once again, with members of the committee, Thank you for the opportunity to present the CSR to you this morning. If you don't mind, I'll switch off my video because I know that I have bandwidth challenges where I am at the moment. And if I leave the video on, I might end up in a situation where the connection deteriorates. So with your permission, I'm going to switch off the video and just leave the microphone on.
So you better choose the option that is going to assist us. You are fine if you have switched it off.
Thank you very much. So what we will cover in the remainder of the presentation, building on the opening remarks by the chairperson of the board, is the CSR mandate and the areas of focus which underpin our strategy. We'll then speak to the pillars of the implementation of our strategy that the chairperson spoke to. Talk to our funding requirements to implement the new strategy. We'll also speak to the funding landscape of the CSR trends as well as some of the constraints that we have experienced in the recent past, and then give examples of our research, development, and innovation programs to illustrate the impact of our work, and then have some concluding remarks at the end. Next slide. Next slide. So the CSR was established in 1945. In fact, on the 5th of October this year, we turned 75 years, which is quite a commendable milestone in the history of South Africa, but also in terms of our own history. Now, Section 3 of the Act that established the CSIR speaks about the objectives of the CSIR. And it's a fairly broad statement, which is interpreted as our mandate. But within this statement, there are perhaps key phrases or sentences which try to capture the essence of what the CSR is about. And I'll reflect on this very briefly. One is that we are expected to perform directed multidisciplinary research in technological innovation. So the work that we do as a CSR needs to be directed towards creating an impact, either in industry, in society, or in government. This is what sets us apart, for instance, from an academic institution, which has the latitude or the leeway to embark on an area of technological innovation or research because it is interesting, without any consideration of the impact that research ought to make. And the mandate goes further to say that we do this to foster industrial and scientific development. In the chairperson already spoke to this, that we had come to a realization that perhaps over the years we had lost the focus on the industrial development component of our mandate. And that perhaps we're not doing enough. Not that we're not doing anything, we're not doing enough in terms of industrial development. I think we'll give examples later on which show the impact that this has had in terms of contributing towards industrial development in South Africa. But we felt that perhaps we needed to do more in this regard, because that is when we can really demonstrate the impact of the work that we're doing. But the industrial development that we wish to contribute towards as a CSR must be driven by scientific development, must be driven by our investments in developing scientific and engineering capabilities that we then apply to drive industrial development. And that ultimately, everything that we do as a CSR must contribute towards improving the quality of lives of the people of South Africa, which is a huge responsibility that has been placed upon us. That responsibility of improving the quality of lives of the people of South Africa. I think the example that the colleagues will speak to later on will perhaps demonstrate how we've done this. I think the recent work we've done in terms of supporting the national response to COVID is perhaps also a very good example of how the CSIR contributes towards improving the quality of lives of the people of South Africa. Next slide, please. So we've taken this mandate, which is very broad, and tried to distill from it a set of statements that perhaps try to define, even at a much more refined level, what the CSR is about. And we've codified this into a vision and a mission statement. So our vision is that we are accelerators of socio-economic prosperity in South Africa through leading innovation. We want to accelerate socio-economic prosperity. It speaks to the pace at which we want to do things. We want to see impact from the work that we are doing. And we do this through leading innovation. We want to invest in cutting-edge areas of innovation and through those make an impact. How we achieve this vision is by collaboratively innovating and localizing technologies whilst providing knowledge solutions for the inclusive and sustainable advancement of industry and society. We've chosen these words very carefully. We speak about collaboration, which we consider to be a very important element in terms of our ability to realize our vision, to deliver on our mandate. We also realize that the impact that we make as a CSR will not only come from the IP that we generate ourselves, that we can bring in intellectual property from other parts of the world. Adopt it and adapt it for specific applications within South Africa. So we don't have to innovate for all the solutions that we wish to develop as a CSR. There's already world-class, best-in-class IP that sits in other parts of the world. We should be able to bring that into South Africa and localize it. But localization also speaks to the issue of ensuring that we improve our technology balance of payments as a country, that we reduce our dependence on imported technologies, imported solutions, that we start also to develop a local intellectual property that supports the local industry. We also realize that our contributions is not only through technology, but also through knowledge solutions that we provide to government, to industry, and to society, that we provide the thought leadership that informs policy, that informs technology decisions that government needs to make. We work with state-owned entities. We work with government departments. My colleague, who is heading our division that looks at defense and security-related programs, can speak at length about the contribution that we make in terms of providing thought leadership to support acquisitions that are done by government, so that we, as a country, we become
you're on mute, CEO.
Yes, I think someone put me on mute. Let's just go back to the previous slide. Okay. So we realize that we
sorry, Chairperson. Yes, there's somebody whose mic is on and that person is very disturbing. It's not a presenter, it's somebody else. Can you please ask the people whoever's mic is on to put it on mute? Thank you.
Okay. Can we all honorable members switch off our mics, please? Can you switch off our mics because that background caused disturbance to presentation. Thank you. May proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So I think I would like to make the point that our contribution extends to both technology but also the knowledge solutions that we provide. And we do this for the advancement of both industry and society. If you can go to the next slide. We have also defined for ourselves a set of values which define who we are as an organization. And our values spell EPIC, and that's the kind of organization that we wish to create. We say that as a CSIR, we pursue excellence, that we excel at research and development and industrial innovation solutions to address Africa's challenges, that we celebrate people, that we are a people-centered organization, that we personify integrity in the way in which we engage with each other, but also in the way in which we engage with our partners, that we are honest and fair in how we work, in how we engage the world around us, and that we welcome collaboration. Today in our mission, but also we felt it was important that we elevate this value in our values as well, that we welcome collaboration with our partners. We design our programs in such a way that they foster collaboration within the organization, but also with our partners in the national system of innovation and broadly. Next slide. So there are four things that we hope to achieve through the implementation of our strategy. One is that we wish to contribute towards the growth of the South African economy, the inclusive growth of the South African economy. And in so doing, we also contribute towards the growth of the CSR, that we use our capabilities, that is the human capital and the infrastructure, to assist in growing the South African economy. Secondly, we want to contribute towards the sustainability and advancement of South African enterprises, but at the same time also contribute towards the sustainability of the CSR. I think the chairperson spoke to this in terms of our funding model and some of the challenges and weaknesses that exist in our funding model. So through the implementation of the strategy, we hope to diversify our income portfolio and as a result, create a much more sustainable organization. We want to contribute towards creating impact through the commercialization of our technologies and innovations for industrial development, as well as technology and knowledge transfer to enable a capable state. And we're very mindful of the duality of our responsibility. That on the one hand, we need to drive industrial development, and on the other hand, we have a role to play in terms of supporting the creation of a capable state. And then lastly, we wish to contribute towards demonstrating the relevance of innovation in industrial development. Because our view is that as a country, we can only speak of sustainable industrial development only if that industrial development is underpinned by innovation, particularly locally developed intellectual property. Next slide, please. Our strategic objectives are indicated in this slide. There's five of them. The first one speaks to the transformative technology that we wish to research, develop, and diffuse into industry. That even though we are placing an emphasis on the CSR, which is a much more stronger industrial focus, we realize that this has to be underpinned by cutting-edge research and development and innovation. The second one is that we wish to improve the competitiveness of high-impact industries to support South Africa's reindustrialization. We'll come to the point of the high-impact industries, which ones are those. We want to do this by collaboratively localizing, developing, and implementing technology. So we wish to translate the cutting-edge innovation that we develop as a CSIR into improving the competitiveness of South African enterprises. We also want to drive socio-economic transformation through research, development, and innovation that supports development of the capital state to gain the role that we need to play in terms of supporting the evolution and the advancement and development of the state. We wish to build and transform human capital and infrastructure, diversify our income, maintain financial sustainability and good governance. The governance is very key to us. And we are very proud as a CSR that for as long as I can remember, the CSR has always had a clean audit. We just completed the audit now by the Auditor General. Our results were released beginning of October. And again, we are proud that we got a clean audit from the Auditor General. This doesn't just happen by itself. It takes a significant amount of effort from the leadership of the organization and the employees to ensure that we jealously guard this track record that we have developed for ourselves. We've translated these strategic objectives into a set of key performance indicators. We'll not be able to speak to them today, but they are key performance indicators that sit behind each and every one of these strategic objectives, which allows us to then measure the extent to which we are able to realize these objectives and to ensure that we use these objectives to drive to day-to-day activities within the organization. Next slide, please. Our value proposition defines that which makes us unique as a CSIR within the national system of innovation. I think one of these is that we are a multi-sector research and development organization. And therefore, we've got capabilities that can be applied across a variety of sectors. I think that is the unique feature of the CSR if you compare our science, for instance, to other science concerns. I think this comes out also in terms of our areas of focus. But this also brings a unique capability that we can now work across sectors and therefore be able to leverage the different experience, different capabilities from different sectors to develop innovative solutions. We have state-of-the-art research and development infrastructure. We'll speak to this later also. We also have highly skilled multidisciplinary human capital base within the organization, which allows us to operate across different sectors and across different fields of science, technology, and innovation. We have a proven track record in terms of technology development, the commercialization of technology, enterprise creation, new business models for the public and the private sector, and scaling up of products and processes. And then we also have the capability to support product and process development as well as service enterprises, particularly because of the multidisciplinary capability that we have, the multi-sector nature of the work that we do as a CSIR. Next slide. So emanating from our strategy development process, we identified 9 areas of focus which underpin our strategy. Now these represent what we refer to as priority sectors, where in our view and based on our own assessment, in our very in-depth analysis, these are the sectors where technology, first of all, can bring about a transformative change. But also these are the sectors which could have the most impact in terms of the economy of South Africa with regards to GDP growth, employment creation, and what you refer to as the multiplier effect in terms of the impact of one sector on another sector. So these then inform the strategy of the CSIR. There's 9 of them as I indicated. The first one focuses on advanced agriculture and food, where we innovate to strengthen primary production, agro-processing, and advancing rural economies. We have a focus on chemicals, where the emphasis is on biochemical conversion, supporting the pharmaceutical sector, as well as advanced materials. We have a focus on health, where we develop technology to drive improved health outcomes through the various products and solutions that we develop, but also to have to develop a patient-centric healthcare delivery system through point-of-care diagnostics, technologies, and our colleagues will speak to some of the examples of work that we are doing in this area. We then have a focus on manufacturing, if you can stay with the previous slide, where our intention is to strengthen the manufacturing value chains to enhance industry competitiveness and support the localization and reduce the dependence on imports into the manufacturing sector. As the honorable members will know, the manufacturing sector in South Africa has been in decline since about 2008, both in real as well as in relative terms. Therefore, we need to turn the situation around. In our view, innovation can play a role in terms of doing that, particularly if one can leverage the opportunities and the benefits that can be brought about by technologies of the fourth industrial revolution. We have a focus on mining, where we wish to support the growth and revitalization of the mining industry through innovation, extending the life of our mining activities and introducing technologies that will create much more safer and sustainable mining operations. So this is an area which in our view, needs to receive significant focus from the CSIR, given the role, particularly, that mining is playing in the South African economy. We will focus on defense and security, where the emphasis is on the security of citizens, of environmental assets, as well as physical assets, through various technologies that we develop in this area. And we'll speak to some of the examples in this regard. Then we focus on what we refer to as smart places, which encompasses the whole area of the built environment, the natural environment, looking at issues of the impact of economic activity and human and social activity on the environment, as well as issues of renewable energy. We focus on what we refer to as smart mobility, which is about ensuring that South Africa has an efficient and effective as well as integrated logistics sector. So we do innovation in terms of the infrastructure that is required for the logistics sector, but also the technology that rides on that infrastructure. So our work covers road, rail, as well as the sea. Then we have a focus on what we refer to as next generation enterprises and institutions, which covers the whole area of the digital transformation that we see of the public as well as the private sector, using ICT as an enabler, but also using a number of other technologies that can be integrated to support this digital transformation. Now, all of these areas are underpinned by cutting-edge technologies, particularly those of the fourth industrial revolution, as well as cutting-edge infrastructure that we require to be able to execute and achieve our intentions within these areas. If you can move to the next slide. The work that we do as a CSIR is very much aligned with the priorities of government. And this slide tries to give an example of this alignment. If you look at the medium-term strategic framework of government, which has a number of priorities that have been identified, but the one can very easily demonstrate how the various elements of the CSR strategy, which I spoke to earlier, contribute towards supporting the priorities of the MTSF. Similarly, if one looks at the STI domains, which came out of the foresight study, which was done by the Department of Science and Innovation, there's a lot of alignment between the work that we do and these STI domains. So move to the next slide. So this slide, honorable members, you don't have in your pack. So the next set of slides, four slides that I'm going to speak to, you don't have in your pack. So I apologize for that. We added them late yesterday because we thought perhaps it is useful for us to just show some of this information. So if you look at the CSR in terms of numbers, we have about 2,100 employees in the organization. 71% of those are Black South Africans and 44% are female. Our set base, and the set base means the science, engineering and technology base. So these are the scientists, the engineers and the technologists who conduct the research and development that is done at the CSR. There's about 1,427 of the 2,100. 65% of the set base is Black, and 36% is female. 21% of the set base has PhDs, and the remainder having qualifications ranging from master's degrees to diplomas. There are various outputs that we track. One of those are the publications we produce, but also patents. I mean, these are figures from the last financial year, which ended at the end of March 2020. In the last financial year, the CSR filed 21 patents. We were granted 21 patents. We filed more than that in terms of invention disclosures. We also look at things that we refer to as new technology demonstrators. Now, these are outputs of our research and development effort that are at an advanced stage of development, of maturity, which means it's an indication of the readiness of the intellectual property that we've generated within the CSR for commercial exploitation. And the number indicates there's 37 in the previous year. We also do work with support small and medium enterprises as part of delivering on our strategic objectives of contributing towards the reindustrialization of South Africa. And last year, we supported 106 small and medium enterprises in various ways. We have a national footprint. In our head offices are in Pretoria. We have facilities in Johannesburg focusing primarily on mining. We have facilities in Durban, in Stellenbosch, in Cape Town, and still have a small activity in Port Elizabeth. If you can go to the next slide. If one looks at our contribution in terms of the creation of startup companies and licensing of our intellectual property, the CSR has contributed significantly to South Africa's research, development, and innovation, as well as supporting universities as well as medical and in industrial research. I think to date, as an organization, we've created 105 companies, and 51% of those are still operating today, which in our view is perhaps a very good success rate in terms of the number of companies that we've created that are still operating. If one looks at the licensing, I think we've signed in the period 2004 to 2014, 105 licenses. The number of companies and the licenses signed in 2004 to 2014 is just coincidental. It doesn't mean that those licenses led to the 105 companies. Sometimes we license IP to an existing entity that is already operating to improve their operation. If you look at startups that we've created, as I mentioned, in total, 105 have been created in the history of the CSIR. But if you look at the period from 1990 to 2014, we have created 54 companies, and 31% of those are still in operation. I think the next slides give examples of some of these companies, and I'll go through those very quickly. Telumet, if you can say with this, Telumet was established in 1956, is still operating today, based on technology which was developed by the CSR called the telerometer, which allows one to do distance measurement and ranging. Thermospray, Verco, are also examples of companies that were created by the CSR, which are still in operation today. I think this perhaps is testimony to the quality of the intellectual property that's generated within the organization that enables these companies to be sustainable well into the future. Some of them will continue to work with today in terms of ensuring that they remain globally competitive. Okay, move to the next slide. Further examples, Optimus Bio. These are recent startup companies that we've created. Resin, Personix is one of those. Even though with Personix, we're not as successful as we thought we'll be, perhaps one of those that hasn't been successful. But the intellectual property that resides within Personix has a lot of potential. They're looking at ways to look at how this can be commercialized in a different model. Next slide. So now if you look at the strategy implementation plan, what are the key pillars in terms of the implementation of our strategy? If you can move to the next slide. So we've identified four pillars for the implementation of the strategy that we spoke to earlier, which guide, these pillars guide the investment of our parliamentary grant. The first one is around the strategic clusters. Now the clusters refer to the 9 areas of focus that I spoke to. Now these house the capabilities of the CSR and aligned, as I said, with the 9 areas of focus of the organization. The second pillar is capability development, which focuses on the development of new capabilities and competencies that will support the realization of the strategy. One key element of capability development that we've established, which sits within the clusters, are the research centers. And we'll speak to some of these perhaps in a minute. The fourth one is the investment in human capital development. I think there's a very clear realization, and the honorable members will agree with us on this, that the work that we do as a CSR depends on us having access to world-class capabilities. And we have to ensure that we continuously invest in the development of human capital within the organization. And then lastly, it's a strategic infrastructure. We cannot do the work that we do without people and infrastructure. Those are the two pillars that enable us to deliver the work that we do as an organization. There are also some drivers for successful implementation of the strategy. These cut across the organization, such as business development and commercialization, technology transfer and diffusion, governance, which I spoke to earlier, values, ethics, and people, as well as ensuring that as we move forward, we align our technology development initiatives to what is happening in the rest of the world, particularly the fourth industrial revolution and other emerging technologies. Next slide. Now, if we move perhaps to the next set of slides, we speak to the funding requirements that we have to achieve the intention of our strategy. I think over the MTF period, based on our own analysis and assessment of what we require, the CSR would require an investment of about 4.7 billion rands to support the implementation of the strategy. And this is split into the four pillars of the implementation of our strategy. The strategic clusters, 2.4 billion rands to support that. Human capital development, capability development, about half a billion rands. Human capital development, 215 million rands. And strategic infrastructure, about 1.6 billion rands in terms of investment. In the next slides, we'll unpack in a lot more detail. To the extent that we can for the presentation, there's a lot of information that sits behind each one of these numbers in terms of where these investments will go towards and the impact that we expect to make through these investments. So if you look at our strategic clusters, which require an investment of 2.42 billion rands over the MTF period, this will be invested in areas such as advanced agriculture and food. If you look overall, I think these investments, as if I get into the slide, will support the development of new capabilities, the strengthening of existing capabilities to ensure that we remain globally competitive and relevant. They also support the investment in infrastructure, the development of human capital. I think that is the essence of what we require to be able to execute the new strategy. So for instance, if you look at advanced agriculture and food, the 70 million rand that we are requesting will go to supporting research, development, and innovation activities, support specific infrastructure that relates to advanced agriculture and food, human capital development, and capabilities for the support of the agricultural and food industry within South Africa. If one moves at the next area of future production chemicals, we're requesting about 250 million rand in this area. And the areas of investment are also explained in the slide. We wish to strengthen our capabilities in biochemical conversion, in CO2 conversion. We are all aware of the problems that CO2 create in terms of global warming. And we have innovation that we wish to develop to look at how CO2, which is considered as a waste, can be converted into use.
Hello, Mr. Tula. Can I stop you there? You have only 5 minutes now to finish up. Giving you 15 to 20, but I've allowed you to proceed, but we are now left with 5 minutes because it's about 10 o'clock.
Oh, I apologize for that. I maybe misunderstood. We thought we had 3 hours, but I'm going to try then and go very quickly. So maybe what I should do, let me move to the next set of slides. I'm going to skip these slides in the interest of time. I think we've spoken about the four pillars. Just move to the slides on the finance section, Elia. Skip all of this. Let's move to the finance section. Apologies for this, Chair. I thought we had more time than this. Okay, let me just maybe here hand over to Ashraf to take us through this section, and then we'll quickly wrap up. Chair, if you can give us another 5 minutes, perhaps, if you have grace, then we can try and at least talk to the key issues in the next 10 minutes or so. Ashraf?
Thank you, CEO, thank you, honorable members, for allowing us the time to present. I'll quickly go through some of these slides. You'll see that South Africa only spends 0.83% of GDP on expenditure on research and development, compared to the world average of 1.72% in 2017. And we're quite far below the high income and upper middle income countries who spend about 2.4 and 1.48% of GDP on research and development. If you can move to the next slide. So, Chair, I think you guys have seen this presentation or this slide from the NASI presentation that was done last week. But just to highlight, we have a target of 46 or 46.9 billion rand worth of investment. We're currently only spending 25.96 billion as a country on R&D. So there's a long way still that we need to go before we get to our target of spending 1.5% on of GDP on research and development. Next slide, please. In terms of our funding model, the chair has spoken about this, where we receive the bulk of our income from the local public sector and from core parliamentary grants, and we only receive currently for 2020 11% from the private and international sectors and 2% from finance and royalty income. And that's for us key is to diversify into more into the local and private local private sectors and also the international sectors, and also commercialize some of our technologies so that we can increase those percentages so that there's a more there's more of a balance between the local, the public sector and the private sector. Next slide, please. So this gives an indication of how the parliamentary grant has moved over the years. 10 years ago, we got 29% of our income from parliamentary grant. Last year or 2020, we received 26%. So there has been a move away from reliance on the parliamentary grant as such, but there's still a lot more that we can and we need to do. Next slide. So Chair, some of the impact of COVID-19 on our business, largely we've been impacted as everyone else in the government by a reduction in our parliamentary grant. We've also had a reduction in our research and development income that we generate for ourselves, partly because we are unable to deliver on some of our international commitments. Due to staff not being able to move around in that, and then also because of the reduced level of productivity during the hard lockdowns. And then also there's some additional costs to comply with the return to work regulations from the Department of Labor. Some of the positives that we've had, reduction in utilities and that from people working from home, rethinking ways of work, and then also new opportunities, and the colleagues will speak about that later on, that we were able to generate in, as a result of the pandemic. Next slide, please. So, Chair, all in all, we were impacted by around about 87 million from our parliamentary grant allocation, a reduction of 87 million rand. About 10% of our grant was reduced. We have had a reduction on our contract income of about 250 million, but we've managed to reduce our costs also in line with that reduction. And essentially, we left with a net loss of 83 million that we expect for the year, compared to a break-even that we had budgeted at the start of the year. So the loss is effectively almost equivalent to the loss in the parliamentary grant that we had to take. Next slide, please. In terms of our impact on our cash flow, we have seen a slight impact. It hasn't been as dramatic as we expected, but we've done a number of forecasts and we update it every month. So initially we expected to have just over 1 billion rand in cash during the course of this year. we're now, in terms of our latest forecast, there's slightly less cash available for us, so around 900 million for cash flow purposes. Next slide, please. Chair, the CEO has spoken about these programs and the impact that we have felt on some of the COVID-19 cuts that we had to make. This is an indication of where we had to make those cuts, largely in strategic infrastructure, 15 million. And then in our support portfolio is 29 million. So we tried to limit the reductions in our core business and focus it on areas, on the support areas rather than on our core business at this stage. Next slide, please. Jay, we want to highlight some procurement challenges that we do face when dealing with contracting with the public sector. we have had instances where, in terms of the procurement legislation, it becomes difficult for the CSIR to provide services for other state-owned entities, even though in our mandate we do indicate that we should receive preference for some of those activities that we undertake. We haven't been able to convince National Treasury of the need as yet, and we've had a number of applications that we've made to National Treasury being rejected. Next slide, please. So just to give you an indication of some of the we did try to apply for a blanket exemption that wasn't accepted. We then submitted several case-by-case exemption requests. The most recent one of them was a transaction that we were planning to do with Transnet. However, we've just received notification from National Treasury that the application wasn't successful. In terms of the impact on our annual revenue from some of these rejections that we get from National Treasury on procurement, where we provide services to other state-owned entities and other government departments, we've potentially lost about 450 million rand during the course of the last financial year. Next slide, please. Jay, that's the end of the finance section, and I'll hand over to my colleague, Dr. Motu, or Rachel. Rachel will take us through the next slide. Thank you, Jay.
Dr. Chukwambe, if you can just pick one or two examples, please, in the interest of time. Maybe stay with the first slide.
We have been involved in the country's efforts to curb COVID-19, and there is a variety of things that we have done, to include making ventilators that are non-invasive, to include showing vulnerable communities and identifying, you know, where we can connect students with internet so that they continue to get education. There is a lot that we've done there. We've tried to also make local kits for detection of COVID-19. We're looking at things that transmit COVID-19, like money, sanitation of money has been one of those. We've looked at different ways of delivering medicines that are potentially more effective. Pulmonary medicines is what I'm talking about. And looking at other control programs, looking at the quality of water and so on. Next slide. We have also been looking at issues of food and food security. And this is a quick example that shows not just the challenge of COVID-19, but you remember we had the challenge of listeriosis. So this is a mobile truck that can actually fit the standards of SANUS, and it goes about testing for pathogens, pesticides, residues, and heavy metals on produce to open up markets locally and internationally for our small farmers. And we need more of these. We just have got the one that we are working on with our collaborators. Next slide. I've spoken about nano drug delivery systems, where we deliver in different ways medications for various diseases, including COVID, but also tuberculosis, looking at malaria and others. We look at nano encapsulation, which is technologies that are used to preserve feeds, food, beverage, vitamins, and so on. A very huge market, which if we can expand, it would be to the country's advantage. And then, of course, we are looking at point of care, what we call the lab on a chip, to be able to do multiple tests to detect illnesses just on the one small device. Next slide. I think that's all I could highlight in our area. Dr. Masirimle would highlight what we do in manufacturing and engineering.
Thank you. Now, we have perhaps the biggest 3D printing machine that we used for titanium metal to develop titanium metal parts. This can be used, this meets the standards, the lofty standards of the aerospace industry. This is based in Pretoria. And is 5 to 10 times faster than the best-in-class commercial systems. So this is the cutting edge. We also have developed new rail monitoring systems for use by Transnet. This detects fractures on the rail to prevent accidents and to pick up fractures before they become dangerous to commuters and to the carriage of rails. Next slide, please. So in terms of mining, we do have systems that pick up instabilities in the ground before they become accidents, and this is to enhance safety. As you know, we have a lot of fatalities, too many fatalities in mining operations, and so this will improve safety, re-entry, life extension of coal mines, rogue engineering investigation, and so forth. Next slide, please. As the honourable members may know, the rhino poaching is a serious problem for the sub-Saharan Africa and for South Africa in particular. We developed a system called Meerkat White Area Surveillance System that, as we speak, is deployed in the Kruger National Park. It's deployed in the part of Kruger. It covers over 20,000 hectares. This is where most of the rhino actually reside. Since the implementation of this system, the sand parks has seen a steep decline in rhino poaching in that particular area. And this system has laser, a radar system, and a camera system developed by the CSR, the radar system in partnership with a South African company on radar systems. Next slide, please. We have also we work very closely with other government departments, most notably the Department of Home Affairs. Hopefully, most of you, if not all of you, have national smart ID cards. We developed this for the Department of Home Affairs. The security features on them, the smart card on the and the overall features. And we continue to advise the department in terms of how to best do this. We advise the department on the rollout of e-channel systems with banks. This is where colleagues can go into a bank and apply for an ID or a passport. We also advise South African banks in terms of using biometrics as a verification method for payment systems by South African banks. SASSA is one of the entities that we advise on the use of biometric identification technology for payment to clients, and we're designing systems that also protect the cyber security of the systems. Next slide, please. So we've had interventions in the fight against COVID. We have investigated the varying utilization of taxi ranks in Gauteng and contributed to response plans of the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport. And in collaboration with the University of Witwatersrand in Cambridge, we've also developed green tires in partnership with Michelin, and this for use on trucks. Tests carried out on the 56-ton trucks and demonstrated a significant 8% to 10% reduction in fuel consumption. And this equates to 8 to 10% reduction in carbon emissions and 4% savings in operating costs for these test trucks. Next slide, please. Now, there's the algae treatment technology that reduces nutrient content and improves microbiological water quality. The value proposition here is that there is no electricity required, no skilled labor or chemicals needed. It costs less and support green economy. Use mainly existing infrastructure and apply algae specific algae consortium. So the implementation projects include one in Rasquikune district and Mossel Bay municipality. And African Development Bank trying algae to determine benefits, implementing technology in Malawi, feasibility assessments underway in Botswana, Mauritius, Mozambique, and Namibia. Thanks a lot.
No, thank you very much, colleagues and honorable chairperson. We apologize again for the misunderstanding in terms of time available. I think the next three slides try to conclude our presentation, and I'm not going to go through them in detail. I have to just highlight the few points made in this slide. The one is around the challenges that we are experiencing in terms of our ability to deliver on our mandate through the constraints that we experience with regards to public procurement. I think our view is that something needs to be done in this regard. We've commented as a space in terms of the public procurement bill in terms of what our expectations and our experience with the PFMA as it stands. I think this is not only a problem for the CSIR, it's a problem for other science councils as well. I think we've spoken to this point already. The second point is around the parliamentary grant. I think the recent reductions in parliamentary grant, once necessary, because of the national response to COVID, they are concerning to us because they have the potential to impact the sustainability of the organization. Given also the decline that we're seeing in terms of our other income streams, both from other government departments as well as the private sector. And then the last point, a chairperson that we wish to make, is a need for the recapitalization of the CSIR to ensure that we have the necessary resources to deliver on our strategy. I think with that, I would like to close the presentation and hand back to Professor Majozi, perhaps to make some closing remarks before we hand back to the portfolio committee. Thank you once more for the opportunity to present this CSIR. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dlamini. Honorable Chair, that is our message and committee members. I think we are now ready to enter the deliberations and questions, if need be.
Thank you very much, Professor Majozi and your team. Let me explain this. At the beginning, I said we are going to give you 15 minutes, and if it's not enough, I will see how do we increase the time. So the 3 hours time, CEO, Mr. Dlamini, it was for the meeting. So, but then the meeting is broken into pieces such that people participate in the meeting. So you won't allow a 3 hours presentation. So that's how we said, no, let's give you sufficient time so that members can also participate in the process. So thank you very much for your input. Honorable members, I think you were listening carefully with the input made by by the Research Council. So I'm going to take a hand for engagement on the input. I think I must allocate about 4 minutes each. So let me start noting hands. Can you raise up your hands, honorable members?
Dipo. Dipo.
Yes, yes, yes. Noted, comrade.
Matafa.
Honorable Matafa. Who's next?
Honorable Tangweni, Chair.
Honorable Tangweni. Next.
Dennis Joseph, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Dennis Joseph. Next. Right, let me start with the first four hands. Maybe if there are no more hands, we'll see whether we'll have a second chance. Honorable Dipur, the platform is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like the previous presenters, I'm also going to have a bit of a challenge to keep the video on. So I beg your indulgence and that of the meeting to switch off so that I can maintain the bandwidth.
Okay, let me proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the Chairperson of the CSIR and the executives, including the leadership as a whole that made the presentation. It was a truly a very interesting and insightful presentation. And given a time, Chairperson, I would really have loved to listen more to what the CSIR is able to do within the constrained environment they are operating on. Chairperson, I think we need to applaud the CSIR for the work that they have done so far, as well as with the work that they have they are still to do within their limited budget. There's an indication that overall in South Africa, we spend about 0.83% of GDP on research and development. And the CSIR is predominantly a research and development SOE. So it would be important for us as this committee to get to know what would be the ideally funded CSR deliver on, which will enhance South Africa's industrial competitiveness globally. I also want to know, Chairperson, what is the input of the CSIR in the BRICS think tank? Because if you look at the advancements in China and Russia, you would actually feel that we are way behind them, and despite the 75 years of existence of the CSIR. The other thing that I would like to hear from the CSIR is the issue related to their focus as an institution on how the industrial innovation and the research that they do contributes to South Africa's drive to be able to make sure that we can then create the necessary jobs in this country. I have seen the companies that they have referred to and to the number of jobs that they have created. There is potential because it does show that when CSIR is involved, the company's jobs are sustained. But it's very small jobs, like 35 there, 69 there. And I think it is important that the CSIR also be capacitated financially to look at the innovation and industrial scale type of interventions that will help us to be able to create the much needed jobs. Is it in the mining sector, but also is it in the agricultural sector? You know, Chairperson, with the capacity that we have, in institutions like the universities and the CSIR, it is an indictment on us to have people going hungry in a country where we could look at different ways of intervening to make sure that we can also produce or come up with capabilities to protect the nutritional value of the food that we have on our shelves, and also the not only the nutritional value but also the shelf life of the interventions. We've got serious problems in South Africa, and I'm happy to indicate that in the early 90s towards the early 2000s, the Department of Health intervened in fortifying maize meal so as to make it possible that our people, when they eat pap as a staple food, the value of the pap can have nutritional value. So if we are not adequately funding an R&D in institution like the CSIR, then it means that the interventions that we need, in particular in fighting poverty and especially interventions in malnutrition and other areas, would not be a help. The other thing, Chairperson, would the 75 years of capability that the CSIR has, and if you look at slide 46, the things that they have indicated that they are able to do, if you look at your defense and security as well as smart place interventions on slide 12, I'm asking myself, Chairperson, why is government through the Department of Trade and Industry and others, as well as your DPEs, not investing in innovation of interventions for the lack of a better word? And let me just backtrack a little bit, and especially in a CSIR itself saying they're looking at innovation and improving the lives of the people of the Republic of South Africa. If you are looking at the improving the lives of the people of South Africa and you have a people-centered value system, then it would mean that the challenges we have with regards to the devastation of our infrastructure system, your rail, water, telecommunication, and electricity network, which is devastated by cable thieves. You have intervened in the Meerkat with regards to rhino poaching, and you have given an indication that since introducing that type of intervention, there's not been the level of the number of poachers in the Kruger National Park, and as well as the interventions that you have made with regards to infrastructure of the locomotives in Transnet. I believe that the CSIR, given the necessary resources, can help South Africa come up with tamper-proof non-metal conductors for this much-needed infrastructure component. We cannot forever not have electricity in the country because of electricity cable theft, or you have your rail infrastructure networks being chopped and stolen piece by piece and railed off or cutted off to be sold in international markets, where it is going to necessarily reinforce their own rail or a road or telecommunication and electricity next to it. So I believe that as this committee, Chairperson, we need to engage National Treasury with regard to this 0.83% of GDP that is spent on R&D. Because if you look at research and development, and you look at the president's economic recovery plan, we depend mostly on proven innovation to be able to make sure that we can move into the new normal. If anything, post-COVID, we need more and more proven R&D outcomes. So it is important for us to look at how, as this committee in particular, we can look at how at least you can move from your 26 point whatever billion to the 46 point something billion that you need to be able to make it possible that you can do the work in the health space, in the defense and security space, in your smart places. Everything is now becoming smart, and it is important that we can then be able to do that. If you look at energy efficiency, Chairperson, I maybe in lastly, I want to know why CSIR, okay, Chairperson, just lastly, why is CSIR not fighting back to get the patent on the solar technology that was sold to Germany? Thank you.
Can I come in, Chair?
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Peters, Honorable Matafa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, I think maybe let me start by welcoming the presentation and thanking Professor Majozi and the team, and agree with Honorable Dipuo that the presentation was comprehensive. And actually, it is my view that we actually should have allocated more time than we have today. Chair, let me also agree with most of the things that Comrade Dipuo has said, because they reflect on my notes as well. And some of them have also been taken away by the revised presentation. So before I ask questions for clarity, Chair, I will start by making a few comments based on the opening of Professor Majozi. And the first one is to agree that the CSIR as an organization requires protection. But Chair, I want to argue that we also need to consider prioritizing it. So we need to take Professor Majozi's sentiment forward, and I will put it this way. In the presentation, we speak of the world trends in terms of the spending on R&D as well as competitiveness. So in preparing for this meeting, I tried to narrow the research in terms of the top performing countries in certain sectors, and how do they spend as far as their R&D spend is concerned against their GDP. And I've realized, Chair, that the most industrial countries are the ones that produce the highest research output. And this is contained in the Nature Index publication of 2018. The same top 10 countries, Chair, also reflect as the world's largest exporters, and interestingly enough, in the same order as they reflect in the R&D space. Again, the same countries, Chair, happen to be in the top 10 biggest economies, and this is in the IMF and World Economic Forum publications. And Chair, what I've picked up is that all of these countries, say the majority of them, spend around 3% on R&D compared to their GDP. So I want to support the view that maybe the parliamentary grant and its reduction is not assisting. And when you look at the makeup of these countries that I'm speaking about, their economies are stable, are strong. And as we are looking at the, turning the economy of the country around, we need to consider the issue of providing the necessary resources to the CSIR. But with competing interest, Chair, from the national fiscals, I think it's also important that as a committee, we put this in our work box going forward. Because year in, year out, there are departments that return funds to the National Revenue Fund. And when we do adjustments, we tend to forget institutions like the CSIR. Maybe let me apportion blame a little bit to Professor Majozi and the team. Maybe they are not presenting their case strong enough to indicate the CSIR as an entity that can also assist the country to turn around its economic fortunes. Because the countries that I've mentioned here, the US, China, USA, Japan, Germany, France, are also reliant heavily on the research and development. Chair, having said that, I just need clarity on just a few things. I think I'll have about four. The first one would be, and I think this is what is missing from the presentation. The revised presentation indicates that there are collaborations with universities. I wanted to ask if whether would that be part of the consideration of the CSIR. I see it is covered. The one thing I'm not sure that I picked up is the collaboration of the CSIR with international institutions or international countries. Because this top 10 countries, Chair, I'm referring to, out of the top 10, four of these countries have collaborations with each other within the space of R&D. And I'll be interested to find out, as a country, where is the CSIR representing us in terms of collaboration with other countries? And I think this, Chair, speaks to our international relations approach. The presenters mentioned that maybe the industrialization policy should also be guided by R&D. I believe that R&D also has a contribution in terms of the international relations in order for South Africa to also gain its space in the competitive global space. Chair, the second one is on the issue of the interface also around the space of collaborations between the CSIR and other institutions that are located in the country. I will use the Innovation Hub, which is located in Pretoria, as an example. How does the CSIR interface with the work that is happening at that level? And how does it interface then with all other institutions that are in the space of research as well as development that are not necessarily funded by them or by the government fiscals. On slide 33, which was the 29 in the previous presentation, there is a point there about a reduction in business spending. I just need clarity there to be clarified. Is the presentation speaking about what the private sector spends in R&D or what SIR spend in relation to the work that they do together with the business spend? I just need clarity on that one particular point. Just need to get the last one. All right, Chair, the other one is on the issue of the constraints highlighted in the public sector spending, and they touched their frustrations on slide 41 as far as their interaction with the National Treasury is concerned, on their outlook of the National Treasury to CSIR exemption applications. Now, Parliament is seized with the process of introducing the Public Procurement Bill. I'm interested to find out if whether has the CSIR made comments to the bill, and selfishly so, maybe trying to achieve a situation where these frustrations that they encounter with the National Treasury are mitigated. And also, if they have, maybe they can indicate some of the salient changes in the procurement bill that would be consistent with constitutional requirements and competitiveness as far as the public space and increment of the revenue base is concerned. Chair, maybe if I still have time, I'll pose another one. In terms of the patents, I've noticed that we have registered a few patents. The question is, how do we protect the IP in the process from concept before it becomes a complete output? Meaning that if I work in the CSIR, are there any clause or any contracts like non-disclosure agreements that we sign that for as long as I work here, I cannot disclose what the CSIR is working on? Because the question that Comrade Du Bois is asking in terms of the solar technology sold to Germany, you will find instances where some of the information leaks. And if it leaks, you might find other countries or other institutions running away with the technology or innovative ideas that the CSIR was busy with in the process of conceptualization to implementation. But overall, Chair, I'm very pleased with what the CSIR is doing. And we'll definitely, as a committee, I put myself that we'll be able to support them going forward. And it also indicates that African excellence does exist when I listen to the demographics of the leadership of the CSIR, and that we are really grateful, because there's one issue that we always raise of transformation of management, and in the CSIR, it appears that it does exist, and we are fully behind their efforts going forward. I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matapo. Honorable Zangwin.
Thank you very much, Chair. And Chair, my apologies for my video. If you can see, I've been in and out because my network is very bad. At where I'm staying. I think that is just maybe perhaps, I think Honorable Dipo Peters have covered some of my questions. What I just want to let the committee note, Chair, the CSR, I have been complaining about their budgets for the longest time. I remember when I was serving in science and technology in 2014. They used to come and make presentations and have been really complaining, and they have been complaining hard enough. I think it's just the onus is upon us as members of parliament. How serious do we see this component and in terms of research and research work within the country? And I think their role have been seen now with the current pandemic that we were having, that what work, actual work they and role they can actually play towards the country. I really think it's the onus is on us as a committee as to when these budgets are coming of the department to fully scrutinize and really assess them that the budgets, they do get the proper funding that they require. Because for me, currently, as I see, you have a fully committed leadership towards a research, but there's no actual, the funding gets cut and so forth. Like when the gentleman was making the last point as well, that they also, due to COVID, had to get budget cuts and so forth. And one would ask, but why were such an important component that is supposed to help in research work and helping with a possible vaccine and all of that, budgets get cut? And yet there are non-important things which money are being added to. So we will really have to really sit as this committee and fully scrutinize and help this committee that are doing excellent work in the research components, Chair. I think that is all the comments that I want to make from my side, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tanguini. Honorable Dennis.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the team for the presentation. I am covered by the previous members' comments and questions, particularly relating to the private sector universities, infrastructure, procurement bill, and international trends. I just would like to ask three questions and just make a comment, Chairperson. To start off, I want to say science and research, as was said, must underpin our vision of government. Meaning that we must become an evidence-based government when we make decisions for the future. And this is where we are assisted very much by CSIR. I am interested just to know the difference between the old strategy and the new strategy, just the key differences, because I find it interesting that there must always be a change in improvement on strategy. I would like to know just what is the difference, key differences. Then of concern, slide 21, I noted the funding that is always a challenge, particularly the new strategy and the four pillars that referred to. I think it links to my question that I asked just to unpack the difference there. Chairperson, I would like to know the loss of 83 million for the year, what plans, because we're in the mid-year now, coming up with a medium-term budget policy statements and framework, what plans do they have to pursue to manage this loss of 83 million? That will give an indication what they will see at the end of the financial year. I am covered by the questions. The last point is I'm pleased to hear that about food security, the health, the human science, even the animals. I think sometimes we just take life for granted when we get up in the morning and come to the end of the day, that so many things, the processes we've gone through where institutions play a big role, chairperson, and that we take things for granted. But I am concerned about climate change. ESCOM has been covered, or electricity options have been covered. Climate change and basic education, the technology that we need going forward to, as they said, the fourth industrial revolution. I need to know more about basic education, creating a better future. And then, of course, I want to ask, is there a link, hearing all these technologies in the area of expertise, is there a link between what the NEL can do, because we know the NEL is struggling. They were one of the best state-owned entities providing services across the world. And is there no work or link or collaboration between them and what the NEL can do? Or is the expertise no longer there? Like we said, the meerkat rhino, protecting the animals, wildlife. I mean, that's a good example. And then, Chairperson, water shortages. I would like to know what is the experience of the team on desalination plants, the systems. We are a drought, water scarce country. Just would like to know what is the, and of course, housing models. Are there any research in housing models in South Africa? We are building houses, but are there no other alternatives that the government can pursue to create more houses or safe houses, but more houses and building houses faster? Maybe at a lower cost too. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Joseph. I see the hand of Honorable Mlenzana. He was cut off during the process. I will allow you your 4 minutes. I want to believe it's the last hand before I give over to our presenter so that he can then respond on the matter. Honorable Mlenzana.
thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for allowing me to raise my hand a bit late. Just like Honorable Langwini, I am currently on and off. I'm not sure what's happening with Laboria Park. When I was home, I would be better placed than here. But then, that as it may, let me also indicate that listening to my colleague, the questions, I was almost covered, Chairperson of the session. However, I may have this one particular question, especially at all, which may be somehow linked to the other questions which have been asked, but mine is put on another way. Prof, what is your view on the many parastatal institutions, particularly when we are talking their collaboration and perhaps putting together their way of working and approach? This fellow talks to your relations with particularly the Department of Higher Education. I'm raising this one of the Department of Higher Education, particularly with regards to the budget constraints that you are raising, and it looks like it's now becoming a norm that you are never given sufficient budget to realize the research work that you have to do. Then the second and the last one would be, if Prof and the team can talk on a youth involvement program. How is CSIR bringing in youth into research programs? I'm raising this because, once more, we may talk budget constraints, but if you listen to the president now talking to rolling out employment-related programs, particularly related to youth, I have a mind which says, if perhaps the FIR could also have that dedicated youth involvement program, particularly towards research, because because you have got this many, many unemployed graduates staying there. I had a function in my constituency wherein we called these undergraduates, young ones. Unemployed graduates, these young ones. And we've spoken to them, and they have listened to the president, speaking, and now are waiting. So can't they be also involved? Perhaps you make a budget which is dedicated for that, and you submit to Treasury. Of course, Chair, without saying we are promising, but I think in our next session with Treasury, I think this has to be lifted. It cannot be that year in, year out, we're talking of one and the same thing of a particular entity not being actually catered for in terms of budget allocation. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mlenzana. perhaps I give the team to respond on your questions and clarities, to say also welcome, echo the words of the members, that we welcome the your presentation. In fact, I think it's one of the institutions that we should have allocated, having planned to allocate it sufficient time so as to understand. I'm sorry, I got a bit disturbed. Technically dealt with. I'm back. So that now we are able to have sufficient engagement on very informative sections of the presentation. But let me just point on a few points here. One is that, when I always talk, I like to make reference to issue of cooperatives. Unless maybe in the slides or in the clusters, it's something that is there. But then my understanding would be here that now that we're talking in the economic recovery plan on building the economy, the Research Council would be able to also show or have a research part as we talk about, industrialization and, building our economy generally that, and in fact, making sure that the previously disadvantaged people also benefit in the economy. We will end up going to say something around issues such as manufacturing. How do you research and see the role of manufacturing zones in all the districts in the country or in all the provinces, manufacturing, cooperative manufacturing zones, how can that, have impact on, developing the economy when you talk about the decline in the manufacturing cluster? So unless maybe that is configured in that manufacturing cluster slide, but if it's not there, then I would want to hear what is the view of the Research Council in as far as those things that can advance, socialization of the economy gradually to previously disadvantaged people. Secondly, is on the issue of the private sector's role. Because I also agree with my colleague that it can't be right. You know what is happening now, as we speak about, as the president was talking about the issue of investment in the recovery plan. We are talking also as to how the state can play its developmental role. But then the moment we are unable to assist with the institutions such as these ones, that's where now the developmental state of the developmental role of the state become curtailed. And therefore, it will be imperative that now at this stage, the issue of investment is actually linked to the general view of the private sector, you know, to do investment boycott. There is symbiotic relationship between the two, because I can't understand why the private sector has so little interest in the work, the good work that the council is doing. So there has to be a tough talk at the parliamentary level that to demonstrate that why do we need investment in the country and the role of private sector in institutions such as the Research Council. Let me come on the issue of legislation. It is calling upon us as a committee how we should have a closer look at the next coming public procurement bill, that it must advance the interest of the previously disadvantaged itself, such that now the curtailment of the role of the research council here to intervene in the small entities, it does tell you that really we as a committee we have to then look, give a close eye on the upcoming procurement bill, so that we give impact in such a way that now as small entities or small companies and they are able to benefit out of that process. So the rest, I think I agree with my colleagues that definitely we have to engage Treasury. Maybe in future it should never ever happen again that we leave out this matter of the Research Council to be not, you know, looked at in terms of the budget and its good work that it's been doing. And I don't understand why Treasury decided to do this, to overlook the request that was made by the council. Perhaps it is important that we definitely have to engage Treasury to correct this anomaly, because we want to see where the good work is being done, not to downplay it and throttle it, but instead to advance it, because what this presentation tells us is that there's a more good work that is coming, but there is a restraint from funding from the side of the Treasury. So let me conclude by before I just give over to the team to respond, to indicate that we are more willing to support the work that the Research Council is doing. Let me give over to Professor Majozi and his team to respond in the next minutes before he leaves us. I'll see you in Park.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Indeed, I'll have to be leaving soon. Thanks for all the comments that have been made by the honorable members. I will just give it the first step and allow the CEO and the team to give the final details. I think the overriding message here, which is very positive, is that an institution like the CSIR is relevant in our national system of innovation. I think the case that is made by the honorable members is that it should be supported, it should be in every way possible protected. So the funding must be sourced, and somehow making sure that we sustain the institution going forward. I think that is the very positive message that we get from all the members. I'll respond to the specifics then, which were raised by different members. I think it's also an overriding theme that the GERD, what we call the gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of our GDP, is really small or low when we're looking at 0.83% when compared to other institutions, or I would say, no, when compared to other countries in the world. And it's clear that the higher that value is, the more the innovation, and of course, that has an impact on the economy. That is very, very true. We are of the view that that must be remedied. The target has always been 1%. We've never been able to even come close to 1%. We've never exceeded 1%. We came close to it, I think it was 2012, that about, when we reached about 0.97 or 0.98, but we've never exceeded the 1%. So we have to work on that. But I want to say something here, Chair and members, that whilst we can put a lot of blame on that figure, we also have to recognize that contrary to many other countries, including those that are doing well in terms of that figure, South Africa in the last 5 years surpassed private sector in research funding. So in the past, it was private sector that was contributing more. But right now, more than 50% of the funding in research comes from government. I think that has to be commended. What that means is that our private sector, perhaps for some reason, have taken their foot off the pedal of our research and development. And that is the place where we have to capitalize and see how the private sector could be brought in and play their meaningful role. But that can only happen if institutions like the CSIR have a credible value proposition. So institutions like the CSIR have a duty to go to these industries and demonstrate and justify why it is important for the private sector to come on board. I just wanted to illustrate the point that right now, our government is spending more than the private sector. In that 0.83%, by the way, which is both private and public, the government is spending more than 50% on that. And I think that has to be commended. And then the issue of industrialization, again, that is an overriding theme among the committee members. I'll reiterate this, because this issue of industrialization talks to the new strategy. And Honorable Dennis, I think, is the one that asked, what is exactly the key difference between our old strategy and the new strategy? Really, the key difference is on this industrialization, because we strongly feel that we dwelt more on the science and research part at the expense of developing new industries. And the impact that we've made so far in industrialization, whilst it's there and evident, you saw the companies that have been formed in the past, as the CEO shared with you, a number of these companies. If you look at the numbers, and this was highlighted by Honorable Peters, if you look at the numbers, those numbers are very, very, very small. And we have to do more. That is a great opportunity for us. And we see ourselves really industrializing on two fronts. Firstly, it is using our know-how to build new industries, because we believe we have the wherewithal to do so. Build new industries, and not just very small industries, but also to commercial scale, so that the impact on poverty, on unemployment, on inequality is sizable. So build new industries, but also use our scientific understanding and knowledge to support existing industries, because we all know that going forward, you'll need industries that will be really, really, really competitive on all fronts. You'll need the industries that will be environmentally competitive, but economically also, they must be very, very competent. So there's no doubt about that. And I think CSIR has what it takes to support those industries. And then there was an issue of collaboration. I think that's a very, very pertinent issue. Honorable Matafa and Honorable Mlenzana harped on this quite significantly. I must say that in what we call our national system of innovation, truly, truly speaking, there is no system whatsoever. By definition, a system is inherently integrated. You would expect that if we had a working system of innovation, what happens at one point affects what happens at another point within the system. That's not what is happening. So you do see an element of duplication of effort, which is very unfortunate for a country like ours. As small as we are, we cannot afford the duplication of effort. So there are loose ends. There isn't enough collaboration that has to be there for us to operate efficiently as a country. So within our national system of innovation, there isn't enough collaboration, not to the extent that we would like to see it happening. We need not only collaborate with the higher education institutions, we also have to collaborate indeed with the other research councils that are in our space and collaborate intensively with the international partners. There are collaborations existing right now on all fronts, but those collaborations are not strictly underpinned by a broader framework that enjoins us or enforces us to pursue them on an ongoing basis. You do find people collaborating with people in other countries like the US, for example. Those things happen among the researchers. You meet someone at the conference and then the collaboration starts. But we need to have a broader strategy that ensures that CSIR heightens its collaboration with all the relevant sectors, not just in the higher education space, but also in industry, in other research councils, as well as outside the borders of the country. And there was also an issue of the procurement bill. This was raised by a number of members, the procurement bill, including you, Chair. We have lamented this for a number of times now. We've raised it with our principals. It would have caught your attention as well by now. We strongly believe that an institution like the CSIR should not be really asked to be tendering, for example, for work that is aimed at supporting a capable state, because within our mandate, we were meant right from the outset to support a capable state. So it is really, really mind-boggling then to see that an institution like the CSIR is also party to this overall, what you would call an anomaly. So we strongly believe that that has to be rectified, and I'm very, very encouraged by your words, Honorable Chair, that the committee would look into that and maybe even approach Treasury to raise this issue, because it does stifle our activities. Actually, the CEO might talk to this in detail, but we lost quite a lot of revenue through this process. It is something that is hindering our performance in a very, very, very big way. We need to attend to that then, if possible, as soon as possible. The CEO is going to talk to the measures that we've put in place in terms of dealing with the loss of the 83 million rand. But the one issue that I must mention before I leave, which I think is very, very, very pertinent, is the one raised by two members of the committee, Honorable Matafa and Honorable Mlenzana, regarding the involvement of the youth, but also the exposure in general of the organization. It is true that we might have not adequately positioned ourselves to make everyone realize how relevant the organization is. Our communication strategy is one of the things that we are looking at very, very closely. In essence, we've just come up with the new communication strategy to address that, so that we are more visible at all levels, including the youth, because we strongly believe that we haven't been that accessible. We have to make this institution more accessible, particularly to the youth. There are developments on that front, and there is what you call the YES program, which is the Youth Exchange and Study Program, wherein the CSIR is now playing a very, very meaningful role. The teams can expand on that. So we've identified that. We've identified the youth as a key stakeholder that needs to be involved in the workings of the CSIR as a whole. But also, we need to communicate our message a bit more. I don't think that we've succeeded in doing that. We'll do more of that going forward. And then the issue of IP, Chair, I'll be leaving now. The issue of IP, it's a very, very important issue. We have what you call the commercialization strategy that is now going to be looking closely at how we protect our IP, but also how do we derive as much revenue as possible through commercialization, for example, through licensing from our own IP. So that is something that is also within our radar screen. So all the points raised by the members are very, very, very pertinent, and they talk to what this new strategy really is aiming to achieve or address, if I may put it that way. I'll stop at this point, because as you can hear, I'm already on my feet and running to the other meeting. I'll hand over to the CEO to dwell on the issues raised by the members, the CEO and the team. I'll leave at this point, if possible, Honorable Chair.
Well, thank you very much for coming and giving us attention. Thank you very much. Your team will take over.
Very much, Chair. Cheers.
Thank you very much, Professor Machoz. And again, thank you, Honorable Members, for the very positive feedback and the questions that have been raised as part of our deliberation. So I'll try and go through some of the details, building on what the chairperson has already said.
Can you switch on your video if you can, Mr. Samin?
So I'll try and go over the details, building on what the chairperson has already said, and I'll request my colleagues to join in terms of some of the questions that have been asked. I think the one around the GDP, R&D investment as a percentage of the GDP, the chairperson has already spoken to this. I think the target that the country has set for itself now is 1.5%, and we are still very far from that. But if one looks at the CSIR and benchmark ourselves with similar institutions like us, if you look at, for instance, the CSIR in Australia called CSIRO, CSIR in India, the National Research Council of Canada, which are similar institutions like us and maybe also established around the same time, CSIR is right at the bottom in terms of the funding that we receive from the state. I think these other science councils, you'll find that they receive 60% and above of their income as a grant from the state. We're sitting at 30% income. I think this is a very fundamental difference perhaps between us and them. And maybe then one should aspire to get to
the doctor here. I say, for example, always say sick. I'm just even I say sick, I can't even bear it.
Can you switch that off, please?
Thank you, Chair. So the next question was around the CSR's participation in the BRICS think tank. We are not involved directly in this, Chairperson. And we welcome the opportunity to participate because we feel that there's something unique that we can bring in terms of positioning South Africa as an innovative country in terms of the deliberations within the BRICS initiative. So we welcome the opportunity to participate in that. The issue around our contribution towards job creation, I think the chairperson has already spoken to this. I think it's true that the enterprises that have been created by the CSIR are small by their very nature. But I think if one looks at developments in the world over, I think what is driving economic development and economic growth is indeed small and medium enterprises. So what we need to focus on as a CSIR is not so much that we need to create companies that employ a lot of people, but is to create more enterprises through the innovation that we develop within the organization. And this requires investment in terms of, as we said, infrastructure. Commercialization of intellectual property is a very expensive endeavor. It's much more expensive than research and development. And at these levels, we find very often that we sit with a large portfolio of intellectual property that we're not able to commercialize. Because firstly, we don't have the resources to take the technology to a point where it can be commercially exploited ourselves. And also the environment within South Africa is such that there's not enough venture capital that is available to invest in the commercialization of intellectual property. So there is IP within the CSIR. If you go, for instance, to the CSIR website, we advertise IP that is ready for commercialization, but the uptake is not what one would expect it to be. So there are also systemic issues that need to be addressed in terms of ensuring that we can create a larger number of technology-intensive small and medium enterprises compared to what we have today. But my colleagues perhaps can add to that. The issue of the improving the nutritional value of agricultural product and shelf life, I'll ask my colleague Dr. Chikwamba to speak to that. Similarly, the next point on the security of infrastructure, I'll ask Dr. Matherimo to speak to that and maybe give examples also of some of the work that we are doing in that regard and the challenges we're experiencing in terms of supporting state-owned entities with regard to the security of infrastructure, speaking explicitly to the point that was raised by Honorable Peter. The issue around why the CSIR is not fighting back to get the patent on the solar technologies that was sold to Germany. We have not been involved in this, I must say. We were involved very early on in terms of the development of this IP in our collaboration with the University of Johannesburg. So this IP was generated by Professor Vivian Alberts at the University of Johannesburg. So we have not been directly involved. If that is the IP that I think Honourable Member is referring to here. So we have not been involved. But we've had our own challenges in terms of trying to enforce our right with regards to South African developed IP. We had a very unpleasant experience with the IP that we developed as a CSIR for the lithium battery technology. And in the main, the country lost because we're not able to sufficiently protect our interest with regards to the lithium battery technology that we developed. In fact, most of the portable electronic devices that we use today, laptops, iPhones, and various other portable devices, are using CSR-developed IP. But the country did not benefit to the extent that we could have benefited because we just did not have the financial muscle as a CSIR to enforce our rights with regard to the protection of this intellectual property. So I'll leave the other questions from Honorable Peters for my colleagues to respond to. If I move on to the questions that we asked by Honorable Matafa, I think we welcome the comments. There were some questions around clarity, some of them pertaining to our collaboration with universities and institutions. I'll glad my colleague Ms. Kungebanjobe to respond to that question and speak to the work that we are doing in that regard. Then there was a question around the CSR's contribution towards the National Procurement Bill. We did make a very detailed contribution towards the Public Procurement Bill. It's an 11-page document that we submitted. I'll not be able to summarize it here. But it's very, very detailed, and we can make this, we can share this document with the committee if that is required. But we made our voice heard, and hopefully, I think our contributions will be considered. I think the fundamental issue for us is that it cannot be right that entities like ourselves, which are created by the state to support the state, when we need to do this, we are subjected to a process where we must compete with the private sector. We must go in a tendering process. But even beyond that, there are certain procurements that are done by government, which are of a very strategic nature that you cannot take through a public procurement process. Just to give an example of this, the work that Dr. Maserumule spoke to of our contribution towards the specification of security features in the South African smart card is an example. Because if the Department of Home Affairs had gone out on a public procurement process to seek input in terms of the design features of the smart card, all that you'll get are the features that sit in the card of the vendor that they want to sell to you. Those features not have been designed with the interest of South Africa at heart. Now, CSR being an independent state-owned entity is able to advise the state independently in terms of what is in the best interest of South Africa. Then with that knowledge, Home Affairs is then able to go and procure a card that meets the needs of South Africa. We are the only ones who can do that. If you go in an open tender process, all you will receive is what the vendor wants to sell you. So we did make a contribution on that issue. The issue of around the protection of IP and if we have any specific clauses in our employment contract with employees, I'll ask Mr. Mabindisa to speak to that in terms of that issue. Then if I move on to the comments by Honorable Klangwano, we welcome the comments and we thank you for that. And then Honorable Joseph spoke about the difference between the old and the new structure. I think the chairman spoke to this. Perhaps I can just add one or two sentences to what the chairman mentioned here. One is that the CSR has gone through a process of evolution. I think between the period, I would say late 90s to about now or recently, the main focus within the CSR was on scientific development. And it came out of a review of the CSR that was done, which demonstrated that at the time when the review was conducted, the CSR had lost its scientific capability. Therefore, there was a need to invest in scientific development, in developing scientific capabilities within the organization. But in so doing, we perhaps, as we like to talk about this, swung the pendulum too far to the one end of scientific development, where scientific development was the overriding theme in everything that we are doing, and perhaps lost the need to ensure that scientific development needs to lead to industrial development. So that is the fundamental difference between the new strategy, where we are trying to create this balance between scientific development and industrial development within the organization. And therefore, then, the areas of focus that we've identified, the operating model, and the structure that we've created within the organization are such that they enable us to have this balance. For instance, we've created a dedicated focus on business development and commercialization. Business development in the sense that we want to ensure that the work that we do speaks to the needs of industry, but also to ensure that the work that we execute as a CSIR is commercially exploited. So it's about striking this this balance. The loss of 83 million rands, I think this is a loss that we are forecasting for the end of the year. Our original budget was a break-even budget before the cuts in the parliamentary grant that we received from the Department of Science and Innovation. So as a result of that, we are forecasting that we will have a loss of 83 million rands by the end of the year. This is after doing everything that we can in terms of cost containment, in terms of cash flow management, in terms of business development initiatives within the organization. We anticipate that we will have a loss of 83 million rands by the end of the year. The link between the CSR and DENAL, I'll ask my colleague, Dr. Maseremre, to speak to that and some of the work we are doing in that regard. The question around water shortages, we have a large program in terms of water research within the CSIR. In terms of desalination, we have technologies, for instance, that we've developed around acid mine drainage and so on and so forth, and even capabilities in terms of desalination. The problem with desalination, as most members will know, it's an energy problem. The issue is how can you ensure that you have the most energy efficient way to desalinate water? And that becomes the bottleneck in terms of the ability to roll out this technology. The removal of the metals and the other salts that are present in water is not an issue. The issue is to be able to do this in the most energy efficient way. And I think that is why this technology has not been rolled out at scale, because you want to be able to clean the water and still be able to sell it at a reasonable price. And if the energy input is very high, and the cost of energy as it is in South Africa is high, then the water that you produce through the desalination process cannot be sold in an economic manner. We welcome the inputs also by Honorable Mlenzana. I think the chairperson spoke to some of the work we are doing in terms of supporting the youth, the Youth Employment Service being one example, but we have a number of other programs, and maybe I'll ask Mr. Mabindisa also to expand on this in terms of some of the initiatives that we are driving to support the youth within the organization. Then, on the comments by the Honorable Chair, Honorable Kaisa, we welcome also the inputs. I think you asked questions about the work that we are doing in terms of cooperatives and supporting district manufacturing zones. I'll ask my colleague, Dr. Rachel Chikwamba, to speak to some of the work that we've done in terms of enterprise creation for development, which is intended to address this particular issue, but also some of the recent challenges we've experienced in terms of our ability to sustain this program within the organization. So perhaps, Honorable Chair, I'm going to stop here and then invite, maybe starting with my colleague, Dr. Mdudi Maseremure, to speak to the questions that are relevant to him, and then we'll move on to Dr. Chikwamba, Ms. Kunranjobo, and lastly, Mr. Andile Mabindisa, if he can also speak to those issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor.
Thanks a lot. I'm sorry, I'm not as visible as I'd like to be. On the
there are several issues on the security of infrastructure, as Dr. Tamini and Honorable Peters has indicated. We do have a very strong capability. We've been supporting the state on the defense side for actually the support to the state predates the CSIR in the sense that the radar infrastructure was developed by the state and eventually was housed within the CSIR. So the same mechanism that we actually brought a security solution to the Kruger National Park is the same modality that we can bring to PRASA, we can bring to Transnet. And actually we are seized with the problems that they have. But the challenge is the procurement bit. And they actually can't find solutions anywhere else, because we do collaborate very strongly with the private sector in this particular cluster, actually both local and international. And the quality of the solutions is very, very high. SOEs that including ESCO, in terms of safeguarding the infrastructure, we have the capability. The problem is on the procurement side, and this is very, very unfortunate, because the solutions that your patches that they try to get with the private sector don't work. That's why some of these problems are still there. And the advantage that we have as the CSIR is that we've been involved at the highest solution development with the National Defense Force, including where they actually go on missions. So in terms of building complex solutions, even with systems that we did not develop, we do very, very, very well here. So the problem there is on the side of the of Treasury in not enabling us to do this for the state. Unfortunately, the economic cost to these losses to the degradation in infrastructure due to crime and lack of intervention, the economic cost is too high in our view. Now, with regard to the link between the NEL and CSIR, this is a historically strong link. Actually, a lot of the systems that the NEL has developed, world-class systems, I might add, that have been sold and distributed across the world, a lot of them will have come through the CSIR, because we have a unique infrastructure in terms of test and evaluation systems. We have the largest wind tunnel system in the Southern Hemisphere and the only one in Africa, but it's very, very competitive in the sense that we do get businesses from Europe, from the Middle East, and actually from all continents in performing this work, because we've been doing this work for a long time. We have a highly differentiated group of engineers and scientists that do this work. So even as we speak, some of the work that we do, we still get subcontracted by Denel sometimes, and sometimes we subcontract Denel to do some of the stuff we do. So actually our hands are bleeding with the state of Denel, because we believe it has a very highly differentiated skill set, and it can be a very big contributor to, of course, notwithstanding the problems that befell it, that are human made, but we have a very strong connection with the NEL. Now, with your indulgence, in terms of international collaboration, the CEO might have just alluded to part of this. We have a very strong international footprint. Actually, in terms of defense systems and other systems, we have a strong a business relationship with China. We have a strong business relationship with Brazil. Actually, we're bidding for over 400 million rands worth on one project in Brazil as we speak. We have a very strong working relationship with China, with Korea. These on highly differentiated systems
that are world class. And so the collaboration, what brings the CSR to the collaboration table in terms of all of these largely SOEs and some private sector companies is the level of excellence and the experience in terms of systems integration and engineering, and also the development of highly differentiated and unique systems that the CSR does. There is one opportunity which we will be able to discuss broadly, where a company in Europe will be is poised to invest over 300 million rands in foreign direct investment. This hopefully will lead to thousands of jobs. And so the pipeline that the CSR has developed of technologies that can bring in sizable investment in the country is quite admirable, given what the CEO has indicated, that we might have taken our foot off the pedal a little bit in the pursuit of scientific excellence. So the new strategy seeks to commercialize more, and we already have a strong pipeline in terms of commercializing these technologies, which will lead to building of companies. And we hope that each of these companies will hire hundreds to thousands of people. And another thing to point out is that our pipeline in terms of skills is very strong, and these are youth. This is the youth, and we pride ourselves in that. Even in terms of you will see the number of females that we have. We are growing the number of female leaders in this area as the executive, as you see with our the representation in our executive team. But it's also growing very well throughout the management of the CSR. And it's really a fantastic place to work in terms of these national imperatives. I'll stop here. Thank you.
Yes, of course.
I can pick up from where I do have bandwidth problems, Chair. So okay. I won't be able to turn on my video. But if I can pick up from where Dr. Masrimble has left, mine was to talk about two key issues. What we're trying to do with rural economic development with support to SEZ, we have what we call enterprise creation for development, which is a team of experts in various fields that can go into any area, assess the economic potential, and assist in the development of business plans to try and create enterprises that create jobs for the people in that space. So we have been working, just as an example, with the Musina Makado SEZ, with Richards Bay. They've been talking to us about a variety of things, with Kuha in the Eastern Cape. And we've done a lot of work also to look at the potential economic opportunities in the Northwest. So this is a capability that sits there, but sometimes it is also hindered by the requirement to put in place a tender to compete with some other people. And then that takes away our ability to really just directly support a capable state. So that was one of the questions that I was going to respond to. There was also a question on food security and preservation of food and food nutrition. I want to move on to that. What we're saying, part of the capital that is required that we're talking about is to strengthen our capabilities in areas such as precision agriculture. And this impacts directly on the productivity of the land with limited water and limited inputs. We are also working on technologies for preservation of food, especially food that we also export, but also the shelf life preservation aspect of it preserves food on our shelves, where we look at natural organic antifungal oils that are used as coatings on food. We've also been working on food and food packaging, and this is something that we're quite proud of, to try to extend the shelf life of the food that we produce. So these are a few of the examples that we we can cite this afternoon. But an important matter also in jobs and jobs creation is that, like the CEO said, we work with small and medium enterprises to try and create small companies that are intensively job creating, not very large companies. That model has worked before, but the future is in making in many medium and small enterprises. And for that, we have open and we have open what we call open access infrastructure, which means that this is infrastructure that offers equipment. It offers our skill, but we require somebody to help us to expand and maintain this. And that is part of the capitalization that we are looking for to say, if we could invest more in these industry-like facilities, we can employ more youth, we can support more SMMEs, and we can create more jobs. Those would be my contributions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Kungela, you want to come in?
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Kunge Ganjobe. Mine is to address the issue of collaboration with universities in particular. I think my colleague, Dr. Masere Mule, has also covered collaboration, including at the international level. There's still more to be done at that level and including at the universities. In terms of collaboration, this is a core part of our strategy. Actually, our mandate asks us to collaborate and work in partnership with others. If you notice, our mission talks about collaboration, our vision, and our values. So this is something that that is core to how we deliver on what we deliver on. And in fact, we have made, we've put together the necessary resources to drive collaborative relationships. In terms of our collaboration, of course, they cover the entire value chain of research, development, and innovation. And commercialization. With universities, we collaborate with them, especially around research development, knowledge generation, and knowledge application type projects. We've got bilateral agreements with most of the universities, except for some of the new universities, like the University of Mpumalanga. We're currently exploring those relationships, particularly in line with our new strategy on industrialization. We also want to make more, to improve our collaborations with historically Black universities as well, as we also promote and support the development into impoverished areas, but also to promote as we drive human capital development, particularly of the new generation of young Black scientists. We have just gone through a review of our relationships with universities, and we've noted that we've got quite strong co-publishing track record, particularly with the previously advantaged universities, and we want to also expand that, as I indicated, to other universities. The new minister, as you know, we sit within the same ministry with the Higher Education Department, has also pressed us to also reach out and create relationships with the TVET landscape. And already we've started, for example, the CSIR is working on a project funded by Ms. Sita on the learning factory. And the idea is to have and learning factory is about providing the type of training infrastructure that will enable new skills in the fourth industrial revolution. And CSIR is currently working on that learning factory with NASITA, and the idea is to also then use that model and transfer it to the TVET community where some of this training is best done. So our relationships with university are wide. We've got some gaps. We're addressing those. We have achieved good results in terms of human capital development. As you know, we don't issue degrees ourselves or qualifications. So all of our students we fund through bursaries as my colleague Andile will indicate, are done through those collaborative agreements with universities. So it's a strong area of collaboration, and collaboration in general is a strong area of focus in our organization. Thank you, Chair.
Next one.
Thank you, Congressman. You want to talk to the issue of youth and the clauses in our employment contract?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'll cover both. So I'll start first with the question of youth. So in terms of the CSIR, so the youth, we have 35%, right, of youth within the CSIR, and of that, 30.4% is Black South Africans, right? And then over and above that, we have a number of activities, right, that we engage youth on, right, as part of developing, right, the skills, and also imparting, right, the skills, and also ensuring that our set base it's very strong. So I'm going to start with the, for instance, with the bursaries. So in total, we've got about 519 bursaries. And of those, we have 157 that are currently doing their PhDs, 216 doing their masters. And then honors and undergraduate is about 146. And then the other program is what we call a studentship program. So this is still a bursary program. However, right, this program it's more than just offering a bursary. It's where we offer fixed-term contracts, right, to students, where we offer them an opportunity to experience the work environment, right, and they contribute, right, to research, right, whilst they are studying, and they are also exposed to mentors during this period. Then the other program, so emanating, right, from our bursary scheme, right, it's what we call the graduate and training program. So this is for engineers, right, to support obviously our industrialization, right, and it's geared towards the engineers to ensure that they acquire, right, their professional registration. Here we've partnered with the likes of EXA, the Engineering Council of South Africa. We've partnered with the likes of South African Council for Natural Scientific Professions, right, to ensure that these engineers are properly qualified. They've got mentors, and also in terms of their career, right, they're properly directed, right, in terms of their career, right. And then over and above these, we've got other programs as well, right, that we provide, and these are geared towards the youth. For instance, vacation work, right, during the June, right, and also the December period, where we bring in students, right, from university and universities, and they're exposed, right, to the work environment in order for them to gain the work ethic. So that's key, and also the experience level as well. We've got internships and as well as the in-service training, especially the in-service training, right, to ensure that those students who are studying their diplomas, right, they qualify, right, and they get their diplomas. Because what we're experiencing now in South Africa, you find that a lot of students, they go to universities of technology, right? However, they do not fulfill the requirements, right, of their qualification, right, due to the fact that they are not given an opportunity, right, to be exposed to the work environment. And it's one of the key requirements, right, in order to fulfill the requirements, right, of their diploma or degree. And that's what we provide, right, to ensure that they fulfill the requirements of their diplomas or degrees. Ms. Njobe has touched on the learning factory, so I'm not going to go into the details of that, but that will also focus on youth, right, especially at the TVETs, where we have a big impact, right, in terms of the future skills, right. And as the CSIR as well, we've gone further, right, with our CSI project, right, where we are now going into the previously disadvantaged schools. So where we're focusing on matriculants, right, in order, right, to ensure that we identify them at an early stage, right, from grade 11, right, where we then ensure that they then get into our bursary program. But it's not just an issue of focusing on the bursary, but on the bursaries, but also on the skills as well, where we impart the skills whilst they are at the high school level. So this is a new program, right, that we'll be launching, right, as the CSIR. So that's in terms of the how as a CSIR we focus on youth. Then in terms of the IP, we have a policy called the Intellectual Property and Technology Transfer Policy. And that is obviously then underpinned supported by the contracts, right, that we issue to staff. And in those contracts, we then have the clauses, right, that cover the issue of the IP. But we take it further. So for instance, during the onboarding, the induction, right, of our new employees. So we also emphasize, right, the issue of the IP and also the benefit, right, to both the employee, right, and to the CSIR. So, and as well as we, in all this, we are supported by the legal department. So that's all from me, Chair. Back to you, CEO. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm looking at my time is 15 minutes before 12 o'clock. Our time ends at 12 o'clock. Let me quickly check with you, Thulani, whether do you have a 1 minute input in summing up?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think this captures everything that we wanted to say. And perhaps the one message that we would like to leave with the portfolio committee with respect is perhaps a humble request for support to National Treasury to allow the CSIR to contract with government entities, government department and state-owned entities for work that is aligned with our mandate without having to go through a tendering process. Because we feel that this is one critical issue, which is a huge impediment in terms of our ability to deliver on our mandate. I think if we can get this resolved, it will make a huge difference in terms of the CSIR delivering on its mandate, but also in terms of the sustainability of the organization. I think our view is that this institution, which has been around for 75 years, is here really to enable government to do that which it needs to do. But with the constraints that we are experiencing from National Treasury, we are not able to live up to what our mandate requires of us. So that is our humble request, Chairperson. And we thank you once more for the opportunity to engage you this morning. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dlamini and your team from the CISR. Hopefully we have taken all the issues that the council has raised with the committee, and the committee members would apply their mind on, because there's a lot of areas of interest that we have raised, which cuts across even in all other departments, government departments, which should be able to assist us as to how do we intervene in some difficult areas. I was also taken by the point on the issue of challenges faced by Praza and Metro Rail, because that says you have a task or a duty then at the end of the day to find way also to engage with Praza or Metro Rail on how to can resolve the issues of security in that area and advise them and how can it be done. But over and above that, we take note of your serious concern around the issue of being under-resourced and underfunded, and that you need a lot of support from us, and also the need to engage Treasury around that. Hopefully, from time to time, you will be able, or in due course, be able to talk or to communicate with the committee where there are challenges in future, so that we can be able to also see how do we intervene in that space that is given. Honorable members, if you agree with me, we've got 10 minutes to do other business, but want to thank very much for the coming of the CSR today. We can release you with your team because we've got another few in-house matters to deal with. We want to thank you very much, Mr. Thulani, and your team. Thank you very much. You can leave the meeting.
Thank you once more, and enjoy the rest of the day and stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
So, honorable members, we are done with the item number four. We are left still with three items, if not four. And we have to run a bit fast. Are all members of the CSR left the meeting, Darren? Have they left the meeting?
Mr. Wolf, yeah, most of them left, yeah.
You can proceed.
Yes.
Honorable members, the next item is a consolidation of the revised program for the fourth quarter. So I'll give Darren to run over quickly over the program, and members will engage on the program and adopt it.
Okay, I don't know what's going on. Basically, honorable members, due to the fact that the request by the Minister of Finance to postpone the tabling of the MTBPS to 28 October has been acceded to, we had to push all of our meetings back by 1 week. So the program in essence remains the same, but everything is pushed back by 1 week. I'm just trying to share it, but I'm having difficulty. I don't know what's going on here. Can I? Okay. I hope it's showing.
Yes.
All right. Okay, today we have the CSIR. And then next week, Wednesday, there's going to be an MTPPS lockup session in Parliament for those members who are around. And then on the 29th, there's a joint briefing by the Minister of Finance on 2020 MTPPS. On the 30th, there's briefing by Department of Trade and Industry and its entities on its role in stimulating economic growth in South Africa. On Tuesday, the 3rd of November, is the joint briefing of all four committees by PBO and FFC on the 2020 MTPPS. That one will focus more on the revised fiscal framework. On Wednesday, the 11th, we are going to receive a briefing from the FFC and the PBO on the second Division of Revenue Amendment Bill and the second Adjustments Appropriation Bill. Thursday the 12th is going to be briefing by National Treasury on the second Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. Friday the 13th of November, it's a briefing by SALGA and public hearings on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. That will be a joint briefing with Select Committee on Appropriations. Tuesday, 17 November, the committee is going to consider and adopt its draft report on the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. And then on Wednesday, 18 November, we will start with hearings with identified departments on the Adjustments Appropriation Bill. We will start with Department of Water and Sanitation. On Friday the 20th, we have Department of Transport. On Tuesday the 24th of November, we have Department of Basic Education. On Wednesday the 25th, it's Department of Economic Development. And then on Friday the 27th, we have public hearings on the Adjustments Appropriation Bill, as well as the 2020 MTPPS. On Tuesday the 1st of December, we are going to consider and adopt our reports on Adjustments Appropriation Bill, as well as the 2020 MTPPS. That is it. Thank you.
Honorable members, this is a revised program. Can I see hands to talk to the program and adopt it?
I propose we adopt, Chairperson.
Honourable members, there's a move to adopt a program. Can I get a second?
I second, Chair, Honourable Matapa.
So the program has been adopted. Honourable Dennis moved and seconded by Honourable Matapa. Thank you very much, Honourable members. Let's step off to adoption of the minutes of the 6th and 7th of October. Hopefully the minutes were received, read, and cross-checked. Can I get the move of the minutes of the 6th of October? Honourable members, can we get the mover of the minutes of the 6th of October 2020?
Chair, it's Honourable Sarupen, I so move.
Okay, sir, Honourable Sarupen moves. Can I get a seconder?
Honourable Matapa, I second, Chair.
Honourable Matapa seconds the minutes. Can we go to minutes of the 7th of October? I get the mover and the seconder.
Honorable Matapa, I move, Chair.
Honorable Matapa moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th. Can I get the seconder?
Dennis Joseph, Chairperson, seconder.
Honorable Dennis Joseph seconds the minutes of the 7th of October 2020. And thank you very much, members. Let's step off that and go to item number 7, announcements and correspondence. Darren?
Thank you, Chairperson. The Public Service Commission invited the committee to a roundtable discussion focusing on a various number of issues. For instance, COVID-19 procurement, etc., etc. The roundtable discussion, they basically requested for a date, and we proposed 28th of October, but that was before the tabling of the MDBPS was postponed. So they are still going ahead. Chairperson Buthelezi is going to do the opening remarks, and it's starting at 9 o'clock. But now the lockup session will start at 11. So the committee needs to decide whether the rest of the members are going to join the roundtable at 9 and then leave just before to go to the lockup session. That is it. Thank you.
Honorable members, that's an invitation which coincides with the lockup session. Can members talk to that that activity on that date and agree what should be our approach then?
Is the question, Chairperson, is it hybrid, is it a physical work discussion, or is it online, Zoom, Microsoft?
It is going to be online.
Okay, thank you.
So what does the committee suggest, think we should do? Because now it puts us in a predicament a bit. Because the lockup session is very critical, and also that meeting. I don't know why the Public Service Commission became so hardened its position if they cannot, because if we want to meet with the Public Service Commission, my understanding is that we would have a separate meeting, briefing session, or a meeting. If really we have a serious issue to take up with the Public Service Commission, it may not do a sufficient, won't demonstrate that necessary interest with the Public Service Commission. And the Public Service Commission itself also won't be benefiting anything if we are not in attendance of their meeting convene, unless maybe there are other people, then it's difficult. We cannot stop that meeting. But one would think that should be in the process of these activities, identify some time to engage with the Public Service Commission, unless the committee thinks a middle road to deal. Let me give the committee to apply its mind on this matter.
Sorry, Chairperson, if I can just explain.
Yes.
It's not only us, so it's not an exclusive event with the committee members, but they invited the committee members. Chairperson is going to deliver the opening remarks, but they just need to know whether the other committee members are also going to be part of the session. Even if it's just for the first 2 hours or for the first hour and a half, and then we leave. Then we exit the meeting and then we go into the lockup. So the way I understand it, the roundtable discussion is still going ahead, but the members that are available to join are welcome to do so. However, they need to know whether the members are joining and which members are joining so that they can prepare on their side.
Okay. Members?
Chairperson, if our chairperson is doing opening address, I think it's only right that our members do take time to join that first hour or two and then join the lockup session. And then also our content advisors, researchers, our admin staff, can be there throughout that workshop on our behalf and bring information back. Because it's not that the decision is going to be taken where our members have to be part of that. It's going to be an open, frank discussion, sharing of information. So my proposal is that our members who's available can join in that first hour or two, because it's online, and then join the lock-up session as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's a proposal, honorable members. Are we agreeing with that we join for 2 hours and then and lock out to the lock-up session? I think silence, that means consent, and agree that members should submit then their members' names to the committee secretary, indicating that they will be in attendance. Right. Now, are there any announcements, Darren?
That was the only one, Mr. Chairperson.
Honourable members, let me take this opportunity to thank you very much for attending the meeting. Hopefully we have gained and we'll still gain in future. Let's hope that now we advance then with our work, with all the issues that have been raised in the meeting, and like to wish you well in further task during the day, and like to thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members. Thank you, staff.